Okay, let's learn. We are in Parshas Balak, page 856. What I want to do, Parshas Balak is the story of the King Balak hiring the non-Jewish prophet Bilam to curse the Jewish people. So what I'd like to focus on this afternoon is Bilam is eventually going to give a series of three what he attempted to be curses, and each one of the three actually turns into blessings. And what I want to do is actually study the first of the three, work through the various things that he says and the interpretations therein, and we will do that. In order to get there, let's just spend a few minutes going over the background just to fill us, take us up to date on the actual story, just as a reminder, and then we'll learn inside the four or five psukim that actually address his first series of I guess you'd call them curses, but of course they actually were blessings. The story begins on 856 with Balak, the king of Moab, sensing that the Jewish people are on their way into the land of Israel. There was a single verse last week, which I didn't point out in the shir, but it's one of my favorite verses, because in a single phrase, the Torah fast forwards 38 years, just in like a phrase, in which we had all the stories of the spies, and the stories of the red cow, which we discussed, and of the rebellion of Korach. All of that happens in the first year and a half, 2 years of their exodus from Egypt. And the middle of last week's parsha, like in the middle of just sort of describing one problem of the story, the hitting of the rock, or the first of the rock, right before the hitting of the rock, the Torah describes, Vayavo b'nei Yisrael kol ha'edah midbar tzin, right after describing the red cow, which we discussed, and the entire nation arrived in midbar tzin. And Rashi points out, that's where Miriam died last week. And then when Miriam died, the Jews ran out of water. When they ran out of the water, we have the story of Moshe hitting the rock. Between the story of the red cow and that introduction, Rashi points out, oh, by the way, we just fast-forwarded 38 years, and as you're reading the parsha, you don't even realize anything happened. It just seems like the next story. Oh, we read the red cow, we read about Miriam's death, we read about the Moshe hitting the rock, without realizing, we just went through all 38 years of their journey in the desert happening. So we are now, from that pasuk last week, continuing on, we're now at the end of the story. We've actually wandered around for 38 years, and we're now about to enter into the land. So this story is now on the cusp of our entering into the land, in which Balak sees the Jews are ready. We're about to go in, and Vayakatz Moab, the Torah describes, Vayogar Moab ipnei ha'am, Vayakatz Moab, they were frightened, they were disgusted by these people, and the King Balak has this idea that what he wants to do is hire the prophet of Bilam in order to curse the people. And as the language of the pasuk describes, Ulai Uchal Nakebo, I'm in Pasuk Vav reading verse 6 just to see his language, because we're going to come back to this later. They are numerous. Maybe I will be able to smite them, the agarshenu min ha'aretz, and I will be able to drive it from the land. And I know that whatever you curse is cursed, whatever you bless is blessed. So therefore, send to Bilam this non-Jewish prophet and let him curse his people that I could drive them from the land. Torah then describes, we're just going to summarize now quickly, he sends officers to Bilam, and they tell him to please come and to curse the Jewish people. Bilam says, spend the night. I need to speak and consult with God before I do so. In the middle of the night, Hashem comes to him in a dream and says to him, who are these people? And he says, what do you mean, who are these people? He says, the king of Balak has sent for me. He wants me to go curse the Jewish people. And Hashem says, do not go with them. That people is already blessed. I have blessed the people. You cannot curse a blessed people. So don't go. So Bilam wakes up in the morning and he says, I can't go. I can't go. So go home. So the officers go home. They return to Balak and they say, Bilam won't come with us. So Balak says, ah, he just needs more honor. I didn't send high-ranking enough officials. See, he sends another contingent to Bilam to hire him to curse the Jewish people with more honorable and higher-ranking officials. And he offers him all of the honor and all of the money that he can. And Bilam says to him, I still can't, I can't go with you, only what Hashem says. They spend the night, Hashem comes to Bilam and gives him a very ambiguous second message. First message Hashem gave him was very clear. He said, do not go with them. The second message, if you wanted to see it inside, it's page 858 on the bottom, verses 20 and 21. Hashem comes to Bilam the second time and says, well, if they came to summon you, you may arise and go with them. but only the thing that I shall speak to you, that shall you do. So that sounds like quasi-permission. He said, if they came for you, you can go with them. Just know, you can only do what I say to you that you can do. And so Bilam does. He goes with them, and he saddles his donkey in the morning, and he goes with the officers, and Hashem gets very angry with him that he went. And that's a different discussion. We may have discussed that in a previous year. I don't remember why it is that Hashem gets so angry at him if he sort of gave him
permission.
He said, if they came for you, you can go. Just do whatever I say. And so he went, and Hashem gets angry. That's a whole discussion, which we will discuss. If you haven't already, we'll discuss another time here. It's Hashem. On the way, we have the famous incident with his talking donkey, in which three different times Hashem sends an angel to impede the path of Bilam on the way to return to the king Balak. And each time an angel appears, and so the donkey either stops in its track or veers off the path or rubs him against the wall. Each time Bilam gets very angry at his donkey, and finally after the third time he explodes in anger and he says, if I only had a sword in my hand right now, I would kill you right here on the spot. And the donkey opens up its mouth and says, what are you so angry at me? Have I ever done this to you before? Have I ever wronged you? I've been a trusted donkey for all of these years. And Hashem opens up Bilam's eyes, and he sees the angel that was standing in the way. And Bilam says, if you look on page 863, verse 34, he says, I have sinned. I didn't realize that you were standing here. But if it is evil in your eyes, I'll return. I'll go home, he says. And the angel says to Bilam, no, you can go with the men, but remember, only that which I give you permission to speak, that you'll be able to do. So we have that whole incident, which of course requires its own study, but we are going to move forward, because then we have our big meeting between King Balak and the prophet Bilam, and the prophet Bilam gives all of his instructions for what he needs. He needs seven different altars and various sacrifices to be brought on the altar, and we will then pick up our story now on page 864, 865, the beginning of Perek Chaf Gimel, chapter 23, where they have finally gotten together, and they are now ready to put into motion their evil plan of cursing the Jewish people. First couple of psukim, let's just do quickly outside. Balak does as he's requested. He builds seven different altars, and they offer up a bull and a ram on each one of the altars. And Hashem appears to Bilam in verse 4, Pasuk Dalet, Vayikar Elokim al Bilam v'yomer elav, Eshivasem mizbechos arachti, and Bilam says, I've done everything. I've set up the seven altars, I've brought the bull, and I've brought the ram on each one. And now let's read together, Pasuk, hey, verse 5, Vayosem Hashem davar b'fi Bilam, Vayomer shuv el Balak v'chosid daber. So Hashem puts into Bilam's mouth the following, and says, return to Balak, and this is what you shall say. So Vayashav Elav, so Bilam returns to Balak. V'hinei nitzav al ol ason, they were standing there by their burnt offerings. Hu v'chol sarei mov, all of the officers. So there was a whole scene. They have all of these the altars, and they'd offered up all of these rams and the sheep, and they're ready to go. A ram and a bull, each one. And Bilam now comes back with a message. And he says, I have what to say. So they're thinking, amazing. We brought you over here, we hired you, we did all that you asked us to do, we built all of these altars, we offered all of these sacrifices. Vayisamish shalom v'yomar, and he proclaimed the following parable. The Torah uses the language as if what he said was a mashal, a parable, and he said as follows. We are in Pasuk Zayin. Min Aram yancheini Balak melech Moav. From Aram, you, King Balak, have led me from the mountains, Meharere Kedem, L'cha Orali Yaakov, U'l'cha Zoyama Yisrael, and come bring anger upon Yisrael. So note right away, he uses the two different names of the Jewish people. He says, you hired me to curse Yaakov, and to bring anger on Yisrael, the Jewish people. But he says in Pasuk Ches, Ma'ekov lo kabokel. What can I curse if God Himself has not cursed? Uma ezaom lo zoom Hashem. And what can I bring anger on if Hashem is not angry? Okay, let's stop here and work that through. So what does he say? So this first thing he says is, what do you want me to do? How can I curse someone if lo kabokel? If Hashem hasn't cursed them, so then, oh, you want me to present a curse? I can't. You want me to bring za'am? You want me to bring anger? How can I bring anger when God Himself is not angry. So those are the two things, curses and anger. Let's take that apart. Rashi's going to do that for us. On the idea of how can I curse them when they are not cursed, Rashi says the following. He says, "Kishahayu ru'uyim lehiskalel." There were times when we, the Jewish people, individuals, and us as a nation, were befitting to have been cursed. We did things that were deserving of a curse. And even then, Rashi explains what Bilam is saying, even then, lo niskalu, they weren't cursed. What does he mean, says Rashi? First story is the story of Shimon and Levi, when their sister Dinah was abducted by Shechem and Hamor. Hamor, the son of Shechem, the king of the city of Shechem, and they wanted to marry her. And they came up with a whole deal in which the brothers said to the city, well, if you all circumcise all of the men, then we'll take you on and we'll make this pact. You could take our Dinah and we'll take your daughters. And of course, as that story unfolds, all of the men go ahead with the bris, with the circumcision. And on the third day, Shimon and Levi come into the town and annihilate everybody. When Yaakov finds out, Yaakov is very angry. And what does he say? Arur apam. Their anger should be cursed. Rashi points out, as if this is a lesson in a modern-day psychology book on how to talk to your children. Don't curse the children, curse their anger. So Bilam says, look, even when they were deserving of a curse, Yaakov doesn't curse the people. You can't curse the Jewish people. All he was able to do, he just cursed their anger. So now you think that I'm going to be able to curse the people? It's not going to work. He says, similar brings another example. When Yaakov Avinu, even before that, Yaakov himself, he steals a bracha from his brother Esav. And their father Yitzchak, who can't see at the time, is unaware of what's going on. And as that story unfolds, which we're not going to go through right now, after Esav eventually comes in and the whole thing becomes clear what took place, so says Rashi, that would have been a time that it would have been fitting that if any time Yaakov could have been cursed, Ma Nem Arsham, what does Yaakov say? Gam Baruch Yihyeh. I gave him the blessing, and he doesn't say, and now he should be cursed, he says, and indeed, he will be blessed. So says Bilam, look, his brother comes in and steals the blessing, and what does his father say? Gam Baruch Yihyeh. He's going to be blessed. Shimon and Levi come in, they annihilate an entire city, and Yaakov's angry, and all he can get out of his mouth is the phrase, Arur apam, their anger should be cursed. So even then, he brings a third example, Rashi says, when the Jewish people entered into the land of Israel, the Har Gerizim and Har Eval, half the nation stood on Har Gerizim, half the nation stand on Har Eval, and they gave the curses and the blessings to the Jewish people. When Moshe gives the instructions to the people before he dies of what they're going to do, he uses the following language. Eile ya'amdu livarech esa'am. These of the tribes should stand on this mountain, livarech esa'am, to bless the people. Ve'elu, and these six tribes should stand on the other mountain. Now, what would have been the parallel? Lekalel eta'am, to Kurt doesn't say that. He switches the language and he says, ve'elu ya'amdu al haklala, on the curses. So that for this half, he says, these will stand livarech, to bless, and these will stand on the curses. So that when the Torah says, Arur Ha'ish, cursed be the man who does this, no one ever used the word that these six tribes should be there to put the curse on the people. They're the ones just to describe, there's such a thing called these klalos, these curse on the people who does this wrong, who does that wrong. But we never put those words together that these people should be cursed. Because we are a blessed people. We might have had trials and tribulations throughout our years of exile. There's no question about that. But we are, and the evidence is, we're still here. Because we're a blessed people. So Rashi says in this first phrase, when Bilam says, Ma'akov lo kobo el, what can I curse? God hasn't cursed. Rashi brings these three examples. They're just not a curseable people. Parenthetically, obviously Rashi didn't know Yiddish. If he knew Yiddish, he would know there are lots of curses you can give. But besides for that, but we're not a cursed people. Right, so we see, but in other words, it's always the language is always if one doesn't, well, these are the curses that one. But to say we have livarech, we bestow blessings. We never bestow. We don't have that. It's we curse their anger or their ya'amot al haklala. They stand on the klala. Gam baruch yehiyah. And therefore, that's the first phrase Rashi says. Bilam says, "What do you want from me?" They're not a cursed people. And then the second phrase he says is, "How can I bring anger upon them?" Lo za'am Hashem. Hashem is not angry. Now Rashi here says a very fascinating thing from the sages. Rashi says, Bilam here was revealing what his secret power was. What was his ability to curse that he was hired here as this prophet with the ability to bestow these curses? How did he do that? So Rashi says, this is based on the Gemara Maseches Sanhedrin. Rashi's language is, Ein ani koichi, my only strength is, ani yodeo lechaven hasho'a she'akodesh baruch hu ko'espa. I know how to determine the moment when God gets angry. Now this is based, the Gemara Maseches Sanhedrin says that every day there's a flash, there's a moment that God gets angry. That's what Gemara says. Bilam says, my power is knowing that moment. I know when that happens. And when that happens, I can give a curse. Because if you're mechavin es hasho, if you're able to direct exactly to that moment, when you catch him at the right time, so then I'm able to give a curse. Now, put on hold the thought that you're having right now of what does it mean that God gets angry every day? Just hold on for a second. Says Rashi, explaining what Bilam says, what do you want? I can't curse the people that's not cursed. And I can't bring angry if God's not angry. What do you mean God's angry? But your power is that every day you know how to get that moment when he gets angry. Says Rashi, based on the Gemara Maseches Sanhedrin, v'hu lo ka'os, all these days that I've been here now coming to be with you, never got angry. Every day the Gemara says, God got angry. I know how to figure that out, when that time is, and I could say the right thing right at that moment, and it's going to be effective. But this period right now that I'm here hired by you, he refused to get angry, and therefore that's the phrase of the Pasuk, Mo'ezom lo zo'om Hashem. How could I bring anger when God hasn't gotten angry? Now, you'll ask, what does that mean when the Gemara says that every day there's a flash, there's a moment, an instant in which God gets angry? How exactly, what does that work? Now, that is a much longer shmooze than we have for this afternoon, but it's worth just noting very briefly. My Rosh Hashiva from Kerbi Avner, Chaim Yaakov Goldwicht, Zichron Levracha, used to explain this. And I'm not going to do this justice because this could have been a whole share unto itself, and I would have prepared it appropriately and we would have spoken about it. He explains that everything in the world is balanced. There are balancing strengths that exist always. The classic example, just in terms of like Jewish philosophy, we have Avram is the Isha Chesed, and Yitzchak, Avram is the man of kindness, and Yitzchak is Gevura, is strength. Yaakov is Tiferes, his glory is the combination of the two. Because those two, if they're ever unhinged is the wrong word, but without balanced, if they're not balanced, it can lead to destruction rather than the appropriateness that they actually stand for. Kindness, unadulterated, unmitigated kindness, if you bring something too close, you literally can swallow it whole. And not leave, this is a simple explanation, not leave any room for it to be of itself, because you so envelop them with your kindness that it's almost as if you haven't left an identity for themselves. Gevura, which is stepping back, says the best kindness is one that's in measure. You give them what they need or in a way that's appropriate, not because you give them everything you got, but that it's held back to the right degree that it's what they need. Gevura, which is standing back, yira, fear, awe, strength, is a great midah, but if it's too strong, then you can't approach, there's no relationship, I can't figure out a way, how do I get in, how do I have a conversation, there's so much distance and strength in between, so they need to be balanced. And that's Tiferes, that's the glory, and a very simplistic explanation of a very complicated concept. Everything in life is a balance between opposite strengths that need to just be balanced in the appropriate manner as to when and how things are done, and that's why all of our characteristic traits are called midot. Midot. So what does a midah mean?
Measure.
A midah means a measure. Why are characteristic traits called a midah? What a strange name for a characteristic trait. Such beautiful midot they have. That literally translates into that they have such beautiful measurements. That's a funny thing. It's not at all what we mean. We're talking about their character, right? But why do we call midos? Because you always have to know when and how. If you have beautiful, there's always knowing when to say yes, when to say no, how long, how much. That is what a midah is. So the Rosh Hashiva used to explain that the idea of Hashem getting angry for a flash, for an instant, is that balance between an olam chesed yibana. The world was built on kindness, and we find that theme, the primary trait of the Ribbono Shel Olam in the world, is his kindness through which we exist, ki li'olam chasdo. And the balance, the counterbalance to that, is a momentary flash of kaas, which is a reflection of gevura, strength, of, but this is not done the way I want it done. Meaning, if it would only be, imagine, and I'm trying to do justice to a big concept in a short amount of time, if you'd have a parent that would always be forgiving and kind and never lay down a rule, never enforce a rule, never set standards, never say there's a consequence to the fact that you didn't do what was expected of you, what really happens in such a, even though you might say, wow, what a home of kindness and acceptance, but we all know, what will that produce? It produces a mess. That's what it produces. There has to be a boundary. There has to be a limit. There has to be a consequence. There has to be, this matters, and if it's not done, there has to be, otherwise, then nothing matters. It becomes overwhelmed with kindness, and then you really don't allow the person to develop and grow. So Shiva used to learn this idea when the Gemara, when Chazal say that there's a moment, a flash of anger every day, that moment counteracts the every other moment of the day. That's ki li'olam chasdo, that it's through Hashem's kindness that we exist. But there has to be some response to, I've asked, demanded, required of you certain behaviors, and if that's not done, there has to be some response, otherwise it becomes that it's out of bounds. Now, why is it just, I'm not prepared, I'm not equipped. What's that? That idea, well, the Gemara says that every day there's a flash, a moment of anger. That's the Gemara, and Bill, Rashi quotes, and in that very same Gemara, said that's what Bilam meant when he said, how can I bring anger when God's not angry? Meaning in those days Hashem withheld his anger, so Bilam had no ability to say anything against us. Why is it that there's a moment of anger? That explanation was given by my Rosh Hashiva from Karmi Yavne, Chaim Yaakov Goldfuss.
Right. For Bilam to say anything in God's name, if God is angry, it doesn't transfer to him to be angry.
Say that again?
Why can Bilam curse just because God is unpleased?
No, so during that moment of anger, I'm not sure if I'm answering your question, I'll say this. So it was just like, using as an example, if there would be a parent who would have that one moment in which they would say, like, enough already. If somebody would come and say, do you know what your son did? During that one moment when you got him, so then it might unleash much more than if a parent just had to sort of release that, let the kid know. But if someone came and pointed out what the child had done or said something, you got him at the right moment. Now, we're using this worldly concepts to explain a divine, so it's a little clumsy, but I'm just trying to do my best with that. What the Rosh Hashiva pointed out at the very end of our story, skipping through, we were not even finished with the verses that we wanted to study today. Three different times Bilam opens up his mouth, and each one of the three times, instead of curses, blessings come out. At the very end of our story, next week's parsha is going to be Pinchas. Pinchas is the story in which Pinchas, because at the very end of our parsha, we have a big problem in which, if you flip to page 874, you will see that the Jews settle in a place called Shittim, and the people begin to commit harlotry with the daughters of Moab. And everything breaks loose in regards to sexual immorality. That unleashes a plague amongst the Jewish people, and that culminates with a verse 6, Pasuk Vav, Vihine Ish Mibnei Yisrael Ba, a man from the Jewish people came and brought a Midianite woman near to his brothers in the sight of Moshe, and they were all weeping because he was performing this illicit act right in front of everyone, and Pinchas comes and kills them both. What precipitated this entire event of they came to Shittim, and then all of a sudden they got involved in idolatry and adultery with all the women? How did that come about? So that comes about because at the very end of our story, in which Bilam was completely unsuccessful in being able to bring about his curses, he is able to give one piece of advice that he gives to Balak. I'm just looking for the exact pasuk that I could read it for you. Here, in verse, page 872, verse 14, pasuk Yedalad. So at the end of his last prophecy, he says, Hinani holech la'ami, I'm going back home. Lecha i'atzcha asher yaseh ha'am azeli amcha bi'acharis ha'yamim. Let me advise you what this people should do to your people in the end of days. And he says, I'll give you the last piece of advice, and he gives his last prophecies, and the sages understand that it was in that last piece of advice that he was saying, send the women to entice the men. I haven't been able to curse. I was totally unsuccessful, but if you want to get to the people, their God hates immorality. Send your women. That's your way in. So the Russia, it did work, it has worked, and has always worked. That's the way God set up the world. He hates it, but that's an enticement. So the Russia said, why did he come to that piece of advice? Like, as if like he came up, that this has been the oldest profession in the world. Like, now he has, oh, I have an idea for you. Why did he all of a sudden come up with that idea? So Shiva said an unbelievable thing. One of the examples of the illicit relationships that the Torah lists, there are many, many forbidden relationships. One is a relationship between a brother and a sister. Forbidden, not allowed. The Torah uses the phrase, ki chesed hu. It is kindness. A very strange phrase when the Torah describes the prohibition of a man living with his sister to say, ki chesed hu. Rashi points out two things, or for sure at least one that is from him. Now Rashi says, ki chesed hu, when was the one time that was actually permitted? There was one time in world history where a brother had to live with his sister. Of Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve are the only two parents in the world. So their children, there was only one way for that first generation that ever existed to create the next generation. So Rashi points out that was a chesed in order for the world to exist. But it's forbidden from that point on. There was no other way around that. Cain and Hevel, there have to have been sisters that were born with them. There's no other way to procreate. But beyond that, it's forbidden. The Mefarshim, the commentators, point out this idea, ki chesed hu. In the same way that we said, kindness is a midah, it's a trait. It has to be done with measure. One has to know when and how, and it has to be balanced with holding yourself back with gvura. An example of unadulterated kindness would be an illicit relationship in which there's no boundary, in which a brother and a sister can say, we're so close, we love each other so much, we take care of each other so much, we're family, our parents instilled within us the value of family, family, family. What would be the greatest perversion of what is ostensibly a beautiful trait of care, kindness, closeness between siblings? Every parent always says, I just want my children to be close to each other. Well, what if the children took that without measure? What if they took that without boundaries? What if they took that without ever saying, listen, there's a limit? Wouldn't then the ultimate closeness between man and woman be the most obvious manifestation of that? Torah says, absolutely not. Absolutely. Chesed hu, there's an element of kindness, but it has to be in measure. And those forbidden relationships that we have, mother, son, father, daughter, brother, sister, are manifestations of yes, relationship closeness with measure. You know, there's a limit. You're not allowed to do in the name of closeness and love whatever you want. There is a limit. The Rosh Hashiva put the two together and said, why was Bilam unsuccessful? He was unsuccessful because God said, I'm not going to get angry while you're trying to do this. Even though there needs to be a balance between the Kili Olam Chazdo is kindness, and that needs to be counteracted by a flash of anger, of din, of judgment. For these days, during this time period, Bilam said, he's not doing it. Which means what took over the world, so to speak, what energy took over the world? Unadulterated kindness, chesed. It was not balanced by that gvura. So Bilam says, you know what you could do? Now is the time to get them. If there's no gvura, there's no limit, and it's unadulterated kindness, this is the time for illicit relations. Send all your women, because the general trait that says that balance, that holding back, which prevents illicit relationships, God Himself removed that balance to His kindness by not getting angry. So it was at that exact time that He says, I have an idea. Not that He just created harlotry for the first time at this point in history, but He said, now's the time to send them, because the energy in the world, so to speak, is off balance. It's all kindness, which is a enveloping with love, which is a closeness, and it's not being counteracted by that, I can't stay away. That's the balance that we need. And therefore, it was specifically at this time that He says, I have the advice for you. I couldn't curse them because He wouldn't let me, but because He wouldn't let me, or the way that He wouldn't let me, should open up the door now specifically to be able to, that energy in the world, that spiritual energy, you can get Him now with Zima. You can now get Him with the illicit relationships, and that's what happened. That Rosh Hashiva put those together, those two concepts. Very, very brilliant insight, which was not my intention to work through today, but I just got distracted by that. But let's see if we can actually get through the psukim that we wanted to do.
It happened, you got distracted.
Yeah. Okay, back to our story. I totally lost my place. Where are we? 864. So he says in Pasuk Ches, verse 8, page 864, Maya kov lo kovo kel, umaya zom lo zom Hashem. What can I curse? God hasn't cursed, as we saw in Rashi, says they're not a cursed people. And how can I get angry? God hasn't gotten angry. Kimi rosh trim erenu migva os ashurenu. From its very origins, Rashi explains, meaning from the Avos and Imos, from Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, I saw they are rock-like, they are solid. Hein om levadod yishkon, uvagoyim lo yischashav. They are a nation that dwells in solitude. They will not be reckoned amongst the nation. And this pasuk has been used by so many in so many different ways. They are a nation that dwells in solitude. Rashi says, let's start with him. That is who we are, says Rashi. We will not be reckoned amongst the other nations, meaning at the end of days when the other nations are given their due, so to speak, we will not be included with them. And what does it mean that we are alone? Kishahein smechin, when we are joyous, when we celebrate, ein uma smecha imam, no one else cares. No one else cares. We do our thing when things are good. We're alone. Mukshaumos betova, but when everyone else, you get to join with them when there are their own good things. And then, hashkafically speaking, in philosophy, this idea of being a nation alone is a blessing. Bilam gives, he wants to curse us, but what comes out of his mouth are blessings, that we are a nation alone. And this has been the story in a nutshell of the Jewish people, of the nations of the world trying to either openly persecute or cause assimilation, and we have always been alone. Often, what seems to us is our biggest threat is when they make us alone. They push us off. That's what the source of our survival. That they didn't let us come. They kept us a separate. They kept us in the ghetto. And so it has been of great pain over the years. But it is the nature of the Jew Hein'am levadar yishkon, to dwell alone, and to be a light to the nations, as the prophet says. To be that bastion of morality requires maintaining a separate identity, and that is, being the chosen people requires that. And Bilam offers it as a blessing. It has often seemed to us, or we've experienced this almost as a curse, being always on the outside. But we are always on the outside. That is the nature of the Jewish people, bringing whatever it is that we bring to the world in so many different ways. But we are always alone. We're called an Ivri, right? Which is the other side. Ivri Anochi. I'm from the other side. And it's such a massive discussion in so many different ways, why and how that manifests itself. But that's the blessing that Bilam gives us, to be that Am Levadad Yishkon. Okay, one more. Mimano Far Yaakov Umispar Es Rova Yisrael. Who can count the dust of Yaakov, or even number a quarter of the Jewish people? Tamos Nafshi Mos Yishorim Usihi Acharisi Kamo. And he concludes, may my soul only die the death of the upright, and may my end be like his, like the Jewish people's end. Okay, work through that first phrase. Mimano Far Yaakov. Who can count the dust of the Jewish people? That's an odd blessing. They have so much dust. Who can even count it? What is the meaning? What does he mean to express when he says, who can count the dust of the Jewish people? So Rashi here quotes again from Chazal. Rashi quotes, the Ofer Yaakov ein cheshbon b'mitzvah shehein mekayimin ba'ofer. You can't even count the number of mitzvahs that they do with dirt. With dirt they do mitzvahs. Rashi gives a number of examples. When they plow their field, they're working with dirt, right? We have the mitzvah. You can't hook up to the same plow two different types of animals. See, if you have an ox, you can't put, even if you might want to plow with a goat, but you can't. You can't have two different strains, two different sized animals. Doesn't work. You have to have the same type of species of animal when you plow. So they're even thinking of the mitzvahs when they're working with the dirt. When they plant seeds, we have all the mitzvahs in the Torah of mixing seeds that you can't plant in the same area. You have to be very careful how far apart. If you have a vineyard and you want to plant tomatoes, how far apart do they have to be? You can't create a type of kilayim, a type of forbidden mixture. So even when they're dealing with the dirt, they're thinking about mitzvahs. When we take for the sota, we take dirt and mix it into the water. The paraduma takes dirt and mixes it in. When you have orla, first 3 years of your tree, you can't eat from its fruit. Even when they're dealing with dirt, Bilam says, they're always having their head thinking about mitzvahs.
I also imagine dirt and dust and the mitzvahs
Yes, they just expand and are always out there. So there are two approaches. The Maral brings us to understand even things which seem insignificant, that you tread upon, that you step on, that you don't pay any, it has no value. Even that, Bilam is saying, even that, Mimana Afar Yaakov, like, how am I going to curse a people that on the lowest of the low, they elevate and they do their mitzvah. So even the insignificant things, so for sure this is a people that I can't touch. The Shemesh Shmuel, in a more Hasidish, Kabbalistic approach, adds to that and says as follows. And he darshens, what did Bilam want? Bilam said, Agarshenu min ha'aretz. I want to keep him out of the land, as we saw from the very beginning. That was his goal, keep them out of the land. So the Shemesh Shmuel says, listen, you have this religious people, keep them in the desert. They want to live a spiritual existence where the man falls from heaven and this miraculous well follows them in the desert and their clothing never wears out, and they have a teacher like a Moshe teaching them the Torah in the desert. Gei gezunta heit. Live there in the desert in your spiritual existence all you want. Leave us alone. Do your thing. You could be a holy people. We're very happy for you. You want to come into the land? You want to come into where we live and plow, and plant, and grow, and live an existence like the rest of us, and claim that you want to be a holy people here too, that we don't want anything, any part of. So, Agarshenu min ha'aretz. I'll keep you from the land. Do your thing, but not... Remember, we're on the cusp of entering in right now. The month's going to stop, the well's going to... Everything is going to... The well already stopped with Miriam's death. You want to be a holy people like us? That has been one of the many claims People always ask, why does the New York Times have such a thing with the Jews? Why are they always bothering with us? There's so many other people. How come they never talk about the Amish? And the answer is because the Amish don't bother anybody. The Amish live in their world. They do their thing. They want to claim to be simple or holy or whatever they want to claim. Everybody says, okay, do your thing. But the Jew wants to work on Wall Street, wants to have a nice house, wants to drive a fancy car, and say that I'm holier than you because I have all these mitzvahs. That's a different story. That's a different story. So Bilam says the same as Shmuel, Agarshenu min ha'aretz, keep him off the land. But the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted, that's what he wanted. He wanted us to come to the land and to sanctify it and not to live in the desert. Living in the desert was not a trial period, but a training ground of what it means to live a spiritual life. We're going to figure it out for 40 years in the desert. I'm going to take care of everything for you. But that's just a training ground. I don't want you to stay there. If Hashem wanted us to live in the desert, he would have kept us in the desert. He wants us to enter into a land. He gave us mitzvahs about planting and plowing and different cows and goats and what can you put together and what if you could put a tomato seed and a cucumber seed and how far apart. Live life. Do it in a holy way. Sanctify it. And Bilam says, even the dirt, the dust, look at how they sanctify. He didn't just bring any example of how they do mitzvahs with a palm branch on Sukkot. He said, the dust they sanctify. The dirt of the land, they find a way to be holding in mitzvahs even when they're dealing with dust, when they're dealing with the dirt. This is the people that, this is the way that Hashem set it out for them to live. And there is no stopping this people from coming in and being able to elevate and sanctify the Ofar Yaakov, the dust and dirt of Yaakov, that we're able to do that and live a life, live amongst the people, and do it in a sanctified, holy way. As he concludes, if only I could die, he says, the death of the righteous. To be able to live such a life and to finish my life in this world as the righteous of the Jews, to finish my task here and then to reap the eternal benefits of a life of righteousness and being straight, so to speak, and upright. Halavai says, Utihi achirisi kamosh, and my end only be like his, and Halavai all of ours as well, at the end of 120 years, to have lived a life of bringing the holiness into everything that we do. Mimona afarya akov, to be an amet levadad yishkon, with pride, to be alone, to be separate, to be distinct, and to be a people that's indeed one of brachas, and never one of za'am, of anger, or of kaboh, or of curses. Okay, those are some thoughts on Parshas Balak. Next week are not here, but Mirtz Hashem after that, for the next couple of weeks, we will have and continue.
Thank you. Thank you.